Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, on Bay Sides and Jacks, after my rookie on the board, SP Futures down 28, NASDAQ Futures down 148. Last night we had NVIDIA earnings, we had Walmart earnings. We have Professor Liu.
Good morning, sir.
Did you get the call today? Is the our government now, Quantum stocks soar as U.S. reportedly plans $2 billion award to them, but they're taking equity stakes. When did this become legal, Liu? When did this become us?
So we've done that. I mean, we've been doing that for a while, and I'm torn. You know, the conflict of interest issue is obvious. You have the government taking, you know, equity stake in a position or in a business in which it has a significant interest, which means the government can now alter the law. It's sort of the perfect rent seeking situation where the government now can alter the law to favor its equity investments. On the other hand, the Fed's fingers are in so many pies that, you know, it almost makes sense for it to try to say, yeah, we contributed to the development of this company. You know, we've used taxpayer money to back their initial startup or to back the technology that they're using now. We ought to get a return on it. I saw this with, you know, when I was working on a couple of matters in litigation against national laboratories where, you know, they had developed with taxpayer money, they had developed some very interesting technologies that people wanted to commercialize, and the deal was you take that to, we'll give you the license to take that technology out of the national lab, but you know we get an investment stake in your operation. I don't know how you do that.
Well, I mean, we talk about that all the time on drugs.
Yes.
If you and I contribute to research in sickle cell anemia and somebody pops out with a cure, how are we not part of the patent?
Exactly.
But so it comes here's two questions. One is, boy, don't you want to take a look at the last 5 days of trades in Trump's account before this happened, considering what's going on there?
Well, yeah, particularly. So I'm. This is a nice little lead into a topic I wasn't sure I was going to touch today because it is still.
Well, I wasn't going to touch it either, but this is the headline, so here we are.
It's still very new. Well, there are other things I wanted to talk about that I actually know something a little bit more about. But this rescue fund, relief fund, whatever, slush fund, whatever you want to call it, this $1.7 billion set-aside that the government apparently has put together to pay, I think it's to pay victims of lawfare and government overreach and other things like that, is astounding.
Well,
I understand the motivation for it. If it was just that, I probably wouldn't be as crazed about it as I am. But the tax relief provisions that have been put into that settlement as part of the settlement for the president and his family seem to me to be totally crazy. Again, I understand why they're there. I just, the idea that you have a settlement, a meaningful settlement between the private citizen and the government, when the private citizen effectively controls the instruments of the government making the settlement, are beyond crazy to me.
Well, by the way, I've been working on my list of questions for you this morning on this very topic, and it's not really about the politics of it. It's about the procedure. Allegedly, and again, this is what I'm reading, and that's why I'm asking the question.
Just so everybody who's listening understands, the president settled. He had a $10 billion lawsuit against the IRS related to the illegal and totally wrong release of his tax returns by some low-level IRS social justice warrior flunky, and that's the I'm going to characterize it that way deliberately.
Of course, every other president has published their tax returns.
Doesn't matter.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's got to be voluntary. You don't want a situation. So he sues him for $10 billion. They settled this week for $1.7 billion payment into a fund that is going to be used to pay damages or claims from people who were either wrecked as a result of the Department of Justice's illegal pursuit of them under certain provisions of the U.S. Code, or who
had illegal been, or just it was at the wrong guys.
No, it was illegal. The Supreme Court overturned the Justice Department's interpretation of a major federal statute, and it was clearly overreach.
Every person who's ever been assaulted by the federal government and is found not guilty feels it was overreach.
I don't care. This was a clear violation, and it was a constitutional violation because it was the Department of Justice doing it. Plus the constitutional violations that were visited on those January 6 guys, who were a major violation of due process in terms of how they were treated in prison and the rest of it. Okay, so this is designed to provide relief to them. I could live with that. I understand the motivation. I don't like it, but I could live with it. But buried in this settlement that he has with the government is a provision that neither he nor his family businesses can ever be subject to, are no longer subject to any IRS audits, and cannot be subject to any IRS audits in the future.
Well, I didn't read the future part. That was just the past.
I think that's going forward.
I thought so too, but then I've not read. You can't find anything super on this thing, but I think it's in the past. I think it's in the past. How can you give somebody a plenary indulgence for something he might do 5 years from now?
I think there was something in there that when I read the summary immediately, and this is one of the reasons I didn't list it as a topic, because I'm not up to speed in it completely. But my understanding was there was some kind of protection in there, but for future stuff, because the certain Democratic leaders, including the current minority leader in the House, have publicly said the minute they get into power, they're going after him.
Why wouldn't they?
With investigations.
Why wouldn't they?
Well, because at some point you would think they would come to their senses and say, we ought to stop this. You know,
Why would I ever stop investigating this bleep about insider trading when I just saw it last week? Why does he get a free pass?
I haven't seen a clear case of insider trading, and if there is, then this gets even worse. But it's not SEC investigations anyway. It's IRS investigations.
I can't imagine how much this guy cheats on his tax returns. I mean, he cheats on everything.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't, quote, cheat, unquote, on his tax returns.
Right.
But in any event, there's some...
Well, how far does it go? It's the kids? It's every business he's ever been involved in? I mean, how far? It's pretty far.
It's the family, yeah. So it really...
Okay, can I ask a couple questions on procedure? One is...
We could try.
Allegedly... The judge.
Remember, we haven't seen the settlement agreement in its full form, and we don't.
I'm not going there.
But there's devils are in details.
I know, but I'm not.
As to how this is going to get put together.
I know. I'm going procedurally here for somebody who doesn't know. The judge allegedly was about to, I won't use the term dismiss it or throw it out, because he or she felt just what you said. You're talking about a guy suing, it's like the mayor suing the city.
Yeah, there were no provisions to firewall the president and his family from intervening in this and directing the Department of Justice to settle it.
Right, so that's an issue. Okay, yep. Now, but if she's going to toss it out for that, why now she has to approve the settlement, correct? Now, why would she approve the settlement?
She doesn't have to approve the settlement.
Why? I thought
very specific cases where you've got to approve the settlement.
Well, the courts, and this one maybe it should be a case.
Well, the courts don't get to come in and tell the executive you have to settle.
But it's the same issue she had to start with. The settlement is not left hand, right hand.
We have a long standing tradition in this country of courts not looking into settlements involving private citizens and the federal government. In the criminal cases, it happens all the time, but that's a different setting. This is a civil case.
I know, but what you just said was he's not really a private citizen when he runs the Justice Department.
Well, and that's the issue. I mean, listen, this is a very serious thing for a lot of us who have followed this. I've read some intelligent commentary, which means it didn't come out of a law school. I've read some intelligent commentary that says if depending on what exactly this means and how it's executed, you could be looking at an impeachment offense. I mean, that's how serious I look at this.
Okay, well, the next question is, where does the money come from? $1.7 billion is the Congress doesn't have to write the check?
Presumably the money comes from the same place the damages would have been paid from if he'd won.
But where's that?
It comes out of a federal operating fund, some federal operating fund that could pay it.
Okay, but now so somebody now has to run this thing. And yep. I was talking to another attorney.
Well, my application's already in.
Oh, yeah, I mean... I was talking to one of my attorney buddies last night, and he is more on the criminal side, so he said, I defer to Lou on this. When you have something like the mesothelioma thing, where there's been a big set-aside of money for people who have mesothelioma, if I sue and I get... I'm just trying to figure out how this works. If I sue and I get... and I win and I get $300,000, my family does because I'm dead... it now comes out of that pot, but the judge or somebody has to order it to come out of the pot. Who's the somebody?
Well, so typically what courts do is they set up something called a special master. I'm amazed this term, by the way, survived George Floyd. They set up what's called a special master, who is like the New York City after 9/11. You know, a bunch of families tried to sue everybody and their dog because we should have anticipated that terrorists would hijack airplanes.
Well, we did have the report about guys flying them, not worrying about they're going to land.
Yeah, I mean, they went after them. And, you know, the government's immune, so you can't sue them for that. We set up a fund to compensate 9/11 families. And that included the firefighters who got killed and the buildings came down. And it included people who breathed in the dust working on the sites. And they
said that everybody
special,
said it was okay to breathe, which turns out wasn't.
Well, that was wrong. They set up a special fund, and then they appointed this very well-respected New York lawyer who ran the disbursement operation. He was designated as a special master, and the court says, listen, here's what you're going to do. You're going to disperse the money according to equitable principles. You're going to give us a report every month about how much money's gone out, how much money remains in there, how many claims are outstanding, what the estimated flow rate is of this, and you're going to send that to us. And he did that for, I don't know, 10 years before before all the claims were exhausted. But that's what you do. That's one way of doing it.
You know, some things we like.
I assume what's going to happen here is there will be some mechanism put in place under either the Department of Justice or probably the Department of Justice that will examine these claims and look at what's happened. And I mean, the claims are wide ranging, Tom, and that's why I said I didn't like it, but I wasn't that upset about the fact that they're going to try to reimburse people like this Tina Peters woman out here in Colorado who got absolutely just violated by a state court system that hated her because she was a Trump supporter, and threw, you know, like Blagojevich, who got thrown in jail for 14 years over that telephone call about the Senate seat.
What about Comey?
Well, you know, and this, excuse me, this was a good point. Somebody raised the issue, well, could Hunter Biden, you know, be for all this, the stuff that came out, people that came after him, could Hunter Biden get compensated? And somebody, I mean, some spokesperson said, yeah.
If we find that it
was unjust, yeah.
But what are they going to find? They're going to have a trial where the person who in charge of the indictment,
you'll put a package together that will detail the unfair or unconstitutional treatment that you received either in jail as a result of a jail sentence or a result of solitary. I mean, for the January 6th guys, a bunch of those guys were kept in solid deliberately. I mean, as punitive measures, kept in solitary confinement.
We had people doing that with people that are citizens because they're Hispanic here.
For months. I'm just saying, yeah. Tom, this is a violation. That's why I'm not that upset over the fact that the fund was established to try to remedy some of this stuff.
Lou, I got no problem with somebody getting arrested, but my point is, now, but in a court case, you're going to have to say, Ricky Garcia, our producer today, was the asshole Ricky's not, by the way, in the Department of Justice that had it out for me. Does Ricky get to come testify? Does he have to?
No, there's not going to be testimony.
How does that work?
It'll be a package of information. It'll contain sworn test. It'll contain testimony. It'll contain depositions. It'll contain testimony in court. It'll contain whatever, but they're not gonna have trials. You will put a package of material together that will go into this tribunal. They will assess it. They may ask somebody to come in and talk to them, but I seriously doubt. Again, devil in the details.
Okay.
I doubt if you're going to be seeing a single quote trial. All the testimony has already been taken.
The term trial is. I'm saying, does Ricky, if he's the man in there, that's the guy who had it out for me, does he get to say, no, I didn't?
No, he doesn't.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Well, no. I mean, if you're going to go forward and say, Ricky had it out for me, you're going to say, okay, fine, where's your proof? Where's the testimony?
How do you prove it without talking to Ricky?
You don't have to. That's the point.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm learning here, by the way.
You won't have to talk to Ricky.
You won't have to really prove it.
You're going to come in with sworn testimony from a court that says, here's the guy, you know, and somebody in court under oath said, here's what happened with this guy. Here's where he was, his constitutional rights were violated.
Okay, right.
And look at the testimony as to what happened to him. He was arrested on a simple misdemeanor trespassing case. His prison records indicate he was put in solitary confinement for 12 months.
Oh.
Right, which happened. That happened.
How could that happen? Oh, Jesus.
It happened because you had a bunch of judges in the District of Columbia who were maniacs and hated Trump and hated anybody associated with him.
Well, that I can understand.
And through the people who set foot into the Capitol grounds on that day, who went just berserk over them.
Well, how can, on a general question, and I know you've told me a bunch of times, and by the way, you know, every lawyer has his story about the day he showed up in law school and the, you know, some old fart professor gives him some long story about the law does not involve justice or something along those lines.
Yeah.
My
story's pretty short, but yeah.
I mean, you've told us, and I remember it. But there, someplace, somewhere, and I know that I'm on the outer end of this, which you've told me 100 times. It's probably why I'm not amazingly successful. I'm going to do pretty good. But I listened to this thing yesterday on News Radio 78. They're talking about a guy and the employment, the plan after COVID where you could get your Employee Retention Act. Mm-hmm. And we went through that I went through this with a 9-foot comb, right? Because we applied for some of that. All right, now, and the whole thing, it's sort of in the same subject we're talking about. The thing was a total bleep show from day one.
It was a free money handout.
Well, okay, but not
to you.
No, but I'm saying what happened was it was supposed to be ratios of what you were using for
and for
salaries, and your place had to be impacted or supposed to have been impacted. Now we were totally impacted, and if you had the riots down here, we had to go up the back door. The only people in the building for like a month. We didn't see a customer in the office for a year and a half. So we were, but my brother, being the most honest creature, the two of us are from the same cloth, followed the rules exactly, and we got like just a little bit, and it was, you know, if everything was deserved, it was deserved because we were pretty much shut down, and so. As time went by, our government figured out that everybody cheated, right? So they kept adding, well, now you can take off some of the rent. You can take off some of this, some of that. Because they knew we might have been the only firm around that actually did it right. I won't say that, but a lot of, and all of a sudden, we could have applied for probably twice as much and have been okay.
But had you only been an illegal immigrant from Somalia... or a legal immigrant from Somalia, because that's what happened in Minnesota, and that's what happened in Maine, and that's what happened in Ohio.
The thing of it is, Lou, some firms were totally unaffected. I mean, there were restaurants that remained open that had their best year ever. But the best is, there's a place in Illinois, you can go every state and find out every... You can't find... I couldn't... If I know a restaurant, if they're doing business in the name of the restaurant, I can find out exactly what they got. But if it's, you know, Lou's Cafe, but it really is XYZ Inc., then I can't find it, right? But there's garbage companies in there that never missed a check, and yet they got all their people paid for 6 months in rent and everything else. There's law firms. I don't think they ever missed a check. Some probably did. Some didn't. There was no, and yet, this long story, I shouldn't have told it, but all of a sudden the other day, my buddy Bill, this attorney, he's got like 6 or 7 people, where the government is after them for applying for the loan, they never got the money. They withdrew it. But because they put it in a false application, they're after them. They never got a dime. This guy out in the Western Burbs, he borrows $80,000. And of course, he really didn't have a company. You know, so, you know, he's a crook. Maybe not more so than some of the other people, but he's a crook. So
he submitted a false application.
Yeah, and he's got his $80,000. So the fine is the $80,000, which I roll with. Got to give the $80,000 back, buddy. You shouldn't have got it. And oh, by the way, there's a $30,000 fine. I can roll with that. 3 years in jail, Lou. What the bleep is that all about?
Yeah.
I'm going to say everybody that I know of but us cheated on this thing. And yet, for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean,
so I have a slightly... How shall I phrase this? I have a slightly more Soviet view on this. Because, you know, in the Soviet Union, if you stole from the state, you know what they did? Up until fairly recently, up until just before the USSR collapsed, they executed you. And they made your family buy the
bullets. There wouldn't be any businesses left if they did it.
Well, not in Illinois. Now, admittedly, Soviet justice was totally arbitrary. I mean, it just depended on who you knew, very much like Illinois. But I'm of the opinion that if you willingly, I mean, not a situation where you've got a rounding error or you misstated something on your taxes or you weren't really clear on some aspect of the code, okay, fine. But if you deliberately falsified a form that or lied to the Fed and stole money, fraudulent you know, fraudulently stole from the government in terms of resources, I'm sorry, you should go to prison. And you know, because as I've said many times on this show, if you want to stop corporate fraud and corporate malfeasance, you don't sue the corporation and fine the corporation. You throw individuals in jail.
You grab
individual corporate leadership, and you don't stop at some flunky 2/3 of the way down the corporate organization chart. You go to the top and you start throwing people in jail. That'll put a dent in it. That at least is effective deterrence.
I am 100% with you. It's bad radio. Yet, Lou Burnett, right now, I'm going to say that it's not just these people are taking it to a new level. Stealing from this government is a national sport.
Yep.
Bigger than baseball or football.
That's why we're not throwing enough people in jail.
But my question is, and I have this argument with Carl all the time, discussion with Carl.
Yeah, Carl wants to take people out and shoot them.
But where do you start?
I'm not there yet.
No, but where do you start?
Where do you start with what?
I'm saying, where do you start? You can't walk in tomorrow to the one drug company you don't like and put those guys in jail. And then we used to have this problem with the, I shouldn't say this, but on the CBOE board.
Why can't you on day, you know, day two, you the day one, somebody sits down at the Department of Justice and says, okay, we're not going to defer fines or prison sentences. We are going after individuals, and to the extent we can find individuals liable, we're going to find them liable and we're going to put them in jail.
We
start today.
Okay, Carl. I would say I'm sort of more on your
Carl
page.
Carl, shoot them.
Yeah, more on your page. But I think, you know, I don't know if I sent it to you because I don't like to bargain that much, but I sent out a missive last week to her. We're sort of at the point where the people we're talking about don't even know it's wrong. That it's been it's been like this for so long.
They do.
But I had this debate with Carl, and I said, okay, well, what about everybody who drives around Chicago has got the blacked out windows and half the people got these obnoxious noisy cars. I said, Carl, I would if I became mayor, I'd have to say this. Okay, guys, I know you spent a bunch of money for this. It's not legal. I'm going to give you 3 months. Go fix your windows wherever you took it to make the obnoxious car noisy, unnoisy it. You got 3 months. After that, we're pulling you over and there's no excuses unless you can't read. You know, if you just started tomorrow, the person would have no idea why you even pulled them over. It's that bad, Lou. It's that bad on the corporate side. It's that bad. Do you think that if you walked into Northwestern tomorrow and said, hey, you guys, you're charging people 4 different prices for an appendectomy, that's illegal, they'd look at you and say, what are you talking about? We've been doing this for 50 years.
Well, okay, so in terms of, now you're talking about the straightforward public policy question as to how you enforce this stuff. You know, fine. Give them send the word out. To put the word out, I mean, my point is, it simply doing that is not going to stop anybody.
Well, you got to follow through.
That's right. So in my opinion, the sooner the better. You start arresting people and putting them in jail and holding them until trial in jail. The minute you start doing that, you are going to start getting people's attention. So maybe you give corporate America 6 months. And you say you're going to go through on these and these statutes. If you are guilty of doing this, we are coming after you.
But you can't have your personal attorney as the DOJ guy. I mean, you got to have somebody in a real.
I don't care.
You know, I know.
If we make that decision, we're not going to restrict people's choices of lawyers. We're just going to say we're going to enforce the law.
Well, okay, but here's, and this I really. I don't know, I'm not...
You'd be amazed.
But I'm not
articulating
myself. You'd be
amazed how many laws there are out there that if the federal prosecutors or the state prosecutors decide they want to go after you, they can find you violated.
I agree. And that's wrong. I mean, we both agree that's wrong. And if somebody was harmed, I don't have a problem giving the guy compensated, even though I don't really like the way this $1.7 billion came about. But here's my point. I've been arguing with people on the show this week, and this is one that's, I guess it's cogent for today. It's about the NBA basketball games. And they're not on, I'll say, regular cable, regular TV. You have to buy a Prime membership to get it. I think, either in the Clayton Act or the Robinson-Patman Act, that is patently illegal. You can't say in order to get this bottle of wine, you got to buy a pizza. There's people on the show don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I did some work in this one class at Notre Dame, and I trust. You can't do that. That's a tied transaction. I haven't heard, not one person has looked at me and said, boy, you know, you're right about that. Am I wrong or right?
Why can't the NBA sell its entertainment product to a private cable company?
They can.
Like Amazon Prime.
The point is you have to buy. It's one thing to sell it to a regional cable. I'm not saying I'm 100% right here, but the point is, if you showed up at a to order a pizza, which just happened on the South Side, if you showed up to order a pizza, the guy at the pizza joint gave you a bottle of wine for $5, and all the wine store said, hey, you can't do that because the wine costs $7, they're selling it at a loss. You can't use something as a loss leader to sell something else. This is in the Clayton Act, for God's sake. Well, now, why should I have to?
If it results in an anti-competitive impact on the market, that's right. Otherwise, it's not an issue.
Well, but this is what one guy whose comment was: why do I need to give? I think if they were to say, you and I could buy the game for $1, that I think would be legal. Okay, or Prime, you know, Prime could, I guess they could pony up if. But you shouldn't have to become an Amazon member to watch a basketball game. It's a tied transaction.
I'm pretty sure it's not. And the my point is I'm guaranteeing you it's legal under what they're doing is legal under the rules of, you know, distribution of this product. There's nothing I'm not familiar with any. Now, if this was over the air broadcast, you'd be in a different setting. But in terms of streaming or cable like this, I mean, they could sell those. They could sell the services. They could set packages of games up like the NFL does.
Well, I think they could if it was the same. I guess what I'm saying, if it was the same product, they're splitting hairs. I'm not saying I'm totally right, but the idea that you have to buy something to get something else is generally considered wrong, isn't it? I'm not saying that if you buy, clearly you got to buy the RCN or the Comcast to get the game right. But it's not quite the same thing if you're buying something different. I mean, if I had to buy a car from somebody to be able to access the cable, I don't think that's right. You can charge for the cable. I think the NBA, I mean, Prime could come out and say it's $1 a game. They can't say no. You have to be a member of Prime to get it.
I think you can. I'm pretty sure they can.
Okay, what I'm saying is, what we're talking about here, the stuff has been going on for so long that nobody even knows.
Your point is that this kind of corruption and mistake or legal interpretations are baked into the system. I understand that. And to go back to your original point, fine, give people 6 months and say, just so you know, this is what's coming down the track. Let me give you an analogy.
Real quick, though, Lou. What if I came out tomorrow and said in Chicago, I try to keep my eyes open driving around. What if I came out tomorrow and said, you know, all you asshole bikers, you don't get to go through every stop sign and red light. You and I know that from when we were kids and got our driver's licenses.
Yep.
Yet the shock on the faces of everybody in the city, they'd say, what's this guy talking about? Where's he from, Mars? But I see that up and down everything. I see it in corporate law. I see it in bicyclists going. I mean, we have totally lost track of the stuff you and I talk about. I think on a country basis, stealing from the. If you don't, we're at the point, and I never wanted to see us get here. I really believe we're at the point. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. And I honestly believe, Lou. I was going to confess to you. You're more my confessor than you are. I'm going to say that I've been totally...
Hold on a sec. Let me put my collar on.
Yeah, I've been totally honest my whole life. And I'll tell you what, it has hurt the living bejesus out of me in business. I look at what whoever his blind guy is, blind trust guy, trading his individual stocks for Trump. And I'm not saying he's getting the phone call, Lou, I would no more, if you were a president and I was managing your money, I would no more trade an individual stock that's in the news than the man in the moon. I'd have you in some kind of two or three indices. I might have protected puts. Maybe I could do some covered calls. I would tell people, the reason why I buy puts is I always buy puts. The reason why I do covered calls is I always buy covered calls. It doesn't matter to me what the news is. I can pick the strike or whatever. You couldn't get me to trade one of these quantum stocks 2 days ago and have this announcement come out today and have the stock go up. Yet these people don't have any morals. They don't care one way or the other. And guess what? They're making all the dough. I'm not.
Well, and again, this is your world. This is your world.
But it's everybody's world. It's if you're not, how do these 20, how do these 20 stocks get in there? Who did they blow, Lou? There's probably there's probably two companies that think they should be in the 20 and they're not.
I'm not the don't have the expertise in this area, Tom. I wish I did.
But it's happening right in front of my face.
Business, in my world, in my business world, when we catch people doing stuff like this, for example, in litigation or whatever, there are consequences. And you know, it may not be exactly the consequence you want, but it's there are consequences and they're public.
Well, Trump's kid,
8% of the cases.
Trump's kid is a big investor in the firm 3 weeks ago. I don't know if you were on. You might have still been out of town. 3 weeks ago, they got a huge drone contract. Okay, why do I have a problem with that?
Well, I understand why you have a problem with it. I don't know. It wouldn't take, I don't know the name of the company, but it wouldn't take rocket science to figure out that these guys are manufacturing products that you're aware of because you know that they're testing in front of the military and you know the test went well. It doesn't take a rocket science to say, okay, let's go out and put some money in that.
That part I get, but if I get it and I'm not the best company because it's Trump's kid who's in it, and that's another whole story.
Well, that's a whole, yeah, whole different ballgame.
And I don't, this, and let me, I don't think let these me, guys have the moral high ground.
I understand, and I've told you, I'm disturbed about that whole thing. Let me switch gears quickly.
Please do.
To a sports topic. So, and this goes back, Tom, to your notice. How do you give people notice about what's happening? So for the last 10 years or so, companies have been engaging in, call it whatever you want, ESG, DEI, intersectionality analysis, basically saying, look, it's a particularly aggressive form of affirmative action, which after the George Floyd situation got even dumber. So I've never been a fan of affirmative action, which actually does qualify as systemic racism or sexism, depending on what standard is being applied, because you essentially take into consideration that which Title VII says you're not supposed to take into consideration, a protected factor in terms of making your decision in the interests of diversity and equity of outcome. So all these companies suddenly became okay in the minds of these companies, especially in the last 6 years, to suddenly become much more aggressive about how they were pushing affirmative action. And they did it most of them did it under the rubric of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Okay. So what a number of them did is they started putting things like, you know, in their policies, we are going to include race as a particular criteria, or it's more important for us to have minority representation, African American, Black, Hispanic, female, gender diverse, whatever. It's more important for us to have that in place and in our workforce than it is to do any kind of a merit evaluation, or this is going to have its own specific merit benefits. Okay. Clearly illegal. I started sounding the tocsin on this probably in 2018 when I was working back at my old firm, and I did a firm-wide presentation on this stuff, and I said, listen, you know, we have clients that are saying explicitly they want more women, African Americans, Hispanics, nobody said Asian, gay, whatever, into their workforce, and they are going to start making selections based on those protected factors. To the extent that they are saying this, to the extent that their policies say this, they're going to get sued. It's a violation of federal and state law. It's a violation of every discrimination law we have here. This went on. And so last, but 2 months ago, then the NFL, of all places, was a huge participant in this thing. I mean, they were, and like a lot of big companies, they were explicit. They said, you got to hire more, whatever. In their case, it was minorities, women in their programs. Now, they had been operating under something called the Rooney Rule for, I think, since the early aughts, 2003, I think, or four is when it came into effect. And the Rooney Rule says you got to interview, if you're hiring for, it started out for head coaching positions. If you're going to have a head coach position open, you fire your head coach, that job becomes open, you must interview, it started out, at least one minority candidate. And that person has to be in the loop. It was pure tokenism, but that's what the rule said. The idea being that if you get to know these guys through the interview process, maybe you'll pick
one. You might find out that out of all the black people who have played football, one of them is capable of being a head coach when there wasn't one for how many years?
Well, but see, this is where it's gotten completely off the rails.
I'm with you on that.
The player status means nothing. It means nothing. You know why? Because the Rooney Rule doesn't say minority candidates anymore, just minority candidates. It says minority or women. So the minute you put women in the mix on this who have never played NFL football, all of a sudden we toss out the qualification that these guys play the game and therefore are somehow entitled to representation in the coaching ranks. So just factor that in for a minute and think about that. In any event, what's happened now is that the Attorney General of the state of Florida has launched an investigation into NFL hiring practices at the senior management levels. And the NFL had policies on its webpage that explicitly said, we're looking for more, we need more African Americans, black coaches, we need more black general managers, or women. They always.
Yeah, I don't know what the woman part got in there, but it's.
Oh, I know how it got in there.
Well, I'm saying it's kind of weird, but
it's stupid because it undermines if you're a black football player who's been banging the drum saying, look, we got 70-80% black participants in this league, but we don't have 70 or 80% black coaches. The NFL just told you that doesn't matter because we can put women in those jobs. So your playing experience is irrelevant. But the Florida AG goes after the NFL and says, listen, you got a couple of clubs operating here.
He's trying to make a racist name for himself.
Every prosecutor does this.
That's why
those college basketball coaches got sued for their hiring practices. Or for recruiting practices. Nobody cared about that except some FBI guy who wanted to make a name for himself. So the AG launches this investigation, and I'm just saying this is a target. You know, this is a whale of a target because the NFL had on its website policies that said we are going to bring, you know, we're going to have quotas effectively. We're going to raise this number, which means we're going to be hiring.
Well, but
by
how do you? Go back to the school situation, and I'm not a person. I want something on merit. You and I agree on this too. We're doing way too much agreeing today. But I have this guy's wife used to work for me, and he went to Harvard. And one night we were having an adult beverage, and he said, "You know, you're talking about a school that has, for years, it was the privileged people from Boston and New England whose dads went to Harvard, they went to Harvard.
Back in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
And all of a sudden, everybody starts having all these standardized tests and everything. And some of those people didn't necessarily qualify. Plus, now you let girls in too, right? So now that narrows the field.
Well, you know where this first happened, Tom, was in the 1920s with Jews.
Well, that's
Harvard explicitly and the Ivy League explicitly excluded Jews because the Jews were testing very well.
Well, that was my next point is, he said, now if you just went by the test scores, not now, but a while back, like you're saying, you'd have had nothing but Jewish kids in New York, like 100%.
Yep.
Because we didn't necessarily want that, not because of the religion, but because you wanted some sort of a, as you're trying to get more of a spread of people here. He goes, this was 15 years ago. He goes, now, if you just went by the test scores, everybody here would be Asian.
You'd have, well, you won't, not everybody, but you'd have a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, there's some desire, because plus, there's 9 zillion universities. So if somebody who thinks they got, screwed out of Harvard, guess what? They go to Yale, they go to, they go to Notre Dame. It's not like they're being totally distant in a world, because he goes, but how exactly do you make it fair and still have it a university? I mean, it's really hard to do that.
You do what you're supposed to do. You do what the Supreme Court said you're supposed to do in the Harvard University of North Carolina cases. You factor in things that allow you to make a decision on something other than pure test scores. And schools got caught in that trap, the test score trap. The test scores remain the single best indicator for success in college. And there's no question about that. That's been demonstrated over and over again. Back before the SAT started.
Except you're talking about a pool where, what's the test? The SAT's 1400. You're not talking about anybody under 1250. So it's pretty hard to split a hair and say the guy with the 1310 is better than the guy with the 1305.
Well, I don't know about that, but
that's what I'm talking about.
If that's the level, but my point is this: that the universities are certainly welcome to use, for example, class differences, and to say, okay, I got a guy who scored at the bottom, say, of our eligible area here, like
yeah, you're not going to take a guy with 400, I don't think.
Well, you're not, but they do, and that's the secret.
Well,
that's the issue.
I told you,
if the school says, look, we got a guy here who's at 1200. Is he admissible? No. What's his background? His background is he's working three jobs, and by the way, he's patented like three or four inventions.
Yeah. Well,
this might be somebody we'd like to have in here.
He might be the Unabomber.
Or here's another guy who's at the bottom of our list. Unfortunately, they don't do that. And they're still not doing it. What they're doing is they're saying, we don't have enough black people in this program, or enough Hispanic people, or enough take your pick, whatever disenfranchised group they think they have to save. We don't have enough of these people here, so we got to find, five or six of them that we can slot into these positions. And we don't care what their scores are; they really don't. We don't care what their scores are. We just need we need black faces.
I'm not all for that, but the idea that the white guy who was forced to go to Northwestern is irretrievably harmed, I don't buy that either.
I'm not saying he's irretrievably harmed. I'm saying that you can make these distinctions, except you just can't do it on the basis of race or gender or sexual orientation or a protected factor, and that's what they're doing.
Simple question, Mr. Attorney, and Mr. Judge, or judge on my show. I happen to know a guy, well, I met him once, a long time ago, friend of Audrey's. Kid goes to some Southside school with a boatload of kids in there, right? And it's a good school, public school. He's number 10 out of, 500 or something. Kid's real smart. He's also a real good baseball player. So he's number, I'm going to say 10. Give me plus or minus 3, but he's up there. He gets a scholastic ride to Stanford. Okay. The lady who, young lady who was the valedictorian that graduated number 1, and the guy who graduated 3 both apply to Stanford and get flushed. Okay. And this kid, I'm not talking about a baseball scholarship. He got a academic scholarship, and he's 10th, and they're 1 and 3, and they don't even get involved.
The baseball player got an academic scholarship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, okay, I understand maybe why they did that. You know, I don't. You know, whatever. But the idea, I don't believe if the number one valedictorian ended up going to, you know, whatever, University of Michigan, and is now, you know. You know, whatever, she did well, and now she's an orthopedic surgeon somewhere. And somehow, she's irretrievably harmed by being tossed at Stanford. There's a million places to go, for God's sake.
Well, you could say that for the minority kids too.
Well, I mean, but I think where we're going with this, and I don't know the answer, Lou, but I'm trying to, you know, just ferret out your knowledge. I also know that if you have a city of 500,000 people, 250,000 of which are black, and your police force is 100% white. Something's wrong with that test. I mean, there's got to be one black guy somewhere that is capable of.
If you're using pure merit, probably not. You know, on the test, as a test score. If the test score is your only measure of merit, probably not. But that's not the factors. I mean, for example, the police exam is a, as I understand it, is a mix of physical. It's like a service academy. It's a mix of physical and academic
written,
performance.
It's written. It was all written here for a long time. Okay. And the language they use. But I guess what I'm saying. But if you're a company, I mean, if PTI had, you know, 500 employees, which I would never want. But if we did, and we were decided to make, we were going to enter, you know, inner city neighborhoods, because there's nobody there. People there can't even open up a mutual fund. They don't have any banking. Well, let's say we're gonna buy a bank, a couple small banks, which you can do not very expensively, by the way. And we're gonna put a mutual fund counter in the bank, just so people in those communities. And maybe we're gonna give on Saturday mornings, you know, a lecture for everybody that this is how mutual funds are. We're gonna try and do our best for the community, right? Probably if the neighborhood is 99% African American. You might want to find an African-American guy to do some of these classes. Not that I can't be there, because, I mean, I don't have a problem with that at all.
And that would be permissible if that was not the principal motivating factor. Or if you could make a convincing case that, look, I need an African-American face in this facility for us to do this effectively. And there are cases where you can make that case easily.
But I would say for the NFL, the thing that's, you know this way better than me, but I get the feeling that in the last 15 or 20 years, ladies are becoming an increasing high percentage. They're not high, but they're not 2% anymore.
If you put, no question, and if you put, and I'm not dumb enough to think that if you don't have to be a super player to or even a necessarily a player to be able to design plays properly or manage the salary cap properly or whatever. I think you have to have played at least at some level, you know, to be an effective football coach. But that's my personal prejudice.
I would agree with that.
The NFL has said that doesn't matter. Okay.
Well, the first lady that they ever plunked in a color spot for basketball is Lady Doris Burke. And I tried to never be a male chauvinist oinker, but the first time I heard a lady being a color announcer in the NBA or college, I go, "Well, that's unusual." Now what? You know what? I can't wait to listen to her. She's terrific. Oh, and she's brought along a bunch of other people
that
are just as good.
That's fine. I don't think that there's any problem with that.
But my first day, saying, I said, "What's she doing here?" Which I don't know why I've had that reaction.
Tom, I'm not saying that women can't be effective head coaches in the NFL. I don't personally believe that, but from a legal perspective, if some football team wants to do that, that's fine. But the point here is this. The NFL comes in, and this is a side note to this DEI hiring issue that is going to get raked over the coals by the Florida Attorney General. This is what we're talking about now as a side note. If you're an NFL, if you come in and tell me the National Football League is 70% black, you should be having more black coaches. My response to that would be, you're wrong, because the NFL doesn't say that. What the NFL says is, we want you to hire more minorities and women because we want to use protected factors in our decision making. But being a player in the NFL is meaningless as far as we are concerned in terms of coaching representation.
I get it, but I have a quick story. We don't want to go too far with our guys here, but remember, I was never a fan. Remember Charlie Weiss, the guy who coached Notre Dame, and then he ended up with a huge contract that went somewhere else. He's getting paid by everybody for like 2 decades.
Yep.
But he was a guy, when he got hired, one of my buddies said, he's a guy that we would never have had a beer with this guy. Plus, he would never play. He didn't play anything, from what I understand. He essentially, I don't know, can I use the term, he was nothing but a jack sniffer. You know, he'd be hung around with all the guys. But he wanted to be a coach, and so he went and he volunteered time. And it turns out the guy had an amazing talent. I mean, he worked hard at it. He was not a dumb guy. For breaking down, you could send him the films back, you know, when they were films. You could send him the films of a game, like the next week team, and he would go through and break down every play. He got so good at it to where he would knock this off in like 2-3 hours. That's why guys like Belichick and people wanted him at their place. I mean, he did all this. He had a talent for that. And then he went on, maybe he was a Peter principle. He ended up being a head coach and didn't do as well there. But what makes you think some young lady can't have that same kind of talent and break down film and do all those kinds of things that a lot of coaches do and design plays and say, here's how these guys scored 8 touchdowns in the last 3 weeks, and by the way, here's the 3 plays they used to score all 8 of them. I mean, I could see a lady doing that easy.
I can too, but that's not the argument.
I'm saying
the argument is you've got X percentage of players who are this caliber or who are this race, you should have coaches that look like that. And I'm saying when the NFL says you can hire a woman into those positions, you throw all of that out the window.
Well,
that argument disappears.
It's not obvious what I'm saying here, but I think you want to hire the most talented people. And there should be a way that if all of a sudden my city, and I'll sum up what I think here, Lou, and you may agree with me or not, if it's my city and I give a police test, the test should, A, be fair. It shouldn't be a way to you know, use Southside language or something where somebody else may not know it. You shouldn't skew the English so only some people pay. And if somebody wants to be a policeman, and maybe they aren't a college educated or something, I would have 2 or 3 at some of the city colleges, some of the best programs for people who want to become policemen or firemen. And when the day comes to take the test, if somebody really wants it, no matter what color they are, they can score high on this test. But you're never going to get me to take the guy who scores 100th over the guy who scored 10th. I can't do that because I care about the rest of the people too. So
okay.
that's kind of where I am now. Is that anywhere in the law? Probably not.
Oh yeah, no. That was our permissible affirmative action programs for decades. And what's wrong with that? Well, nothing under the law. But what happened when DEI jumped in was people said, we're not getting enough results that we want. We're going to force it. And the minute they said, we're going to force the distribution, yeah, we're going to force representation.
I never agreed with
now
that.
Now you're selecting based on those protected factors. I've taken enough of Andrew and Wayne's time, so I'm going to bail.
I don't want the number 100 guy ahead of the number 3 guy.
Yeah, well, that's what you end up with in some of these cases. All right, I got to run.
All right,
you guys
have
a terrific week, and you could go skiing up in the mountains today.
Are you?
Well, no, it's all. I mean, but we had that much snow.
All right, what's it doing to the water? Is it helping?
It's better. We got up to 2 inches of moisture in this last snowfall, so that's helpful.
So Lake Mead is not going to be dry.
We got to have about another month and a half of really solid rain before they start changing Lake Mead. But it's better than it was.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Right,
S&P futures down 20. NASDAQ futures down 129. Andrew Wayne. What do you think of all this? Did you guys buy these? You guys are so close to this. Why aren't you calling me up and saying, buy these 20 quantum stocks? Why aren't you buddies? Why aren't you buddies?
We're not on the inside list, but I got to clarify a quick point along with my good morning. I tune in early to hear you and Lou talk, so we don't mind you going a little bit long. It's good stuff.
What did you hear that we said that you'd love to comment on? Because I'm sure there was stuff.
Well,
there.
At one point, I hope you had the sound turned off because I think I laughed when out loud when which is a good better than coffee when you were talking about the different standards and. And you said, well, that's going to admit a Unabomber.
By the way, you know how close that guy lived to you?
No. We weren't friends.
You were 98th in Pulaski, roughly, right? Or 102nd in Pulaski?
No. Let me think. 4328 West 100th Street.
Okay, so you were just west of Pulaski. Pulaski's 4,000.
Yeah.
Right. He was like 97th, almost the a mile east, right by, you know where the 91st and Millard, that park there?
Oh.
He was right around that park. He was like 93rd and Ridgeway.
It's something on the water.
So you might have played baseball with the guy. You don't know. What do you think of that, Wayne? Andrew Unabomber, what's the difference?
Oh, I don't know. Well, the Unabomber, he was. I think wasn't that one of the first cases where one of these criminal minds had issued this long manifesto, and now everybody seems, even these two characters out in San Diego, apparently. Left some sort of written manifesto, which I don't think they want to really release. It's always the same. Of course, what's in the manifesto is always seems to be the same sort of grievances, gripes, and wild speculation.
Well, I think that if anybody doesn't think that there are people against them here somehow, but my question to you guys on the Harvard shtick, how did Harvard never be at least kicked into the air by a newspaper or something for what they did to that guy? How did they come off clean? They took the guy when he was 16 and put him in LSD experiments, right?
They had Timothy Leary there, who was maybe an assistant Harvard professor who was experimenting with that stuff.
J.D. Salinger was also involved in that. And I always thought it was weird. Every time there was an assassin, and they go into the guy's apartment, and there would be hardly anything in there except for a couple of books. One of which was always seemed to be Catcher in the Rye.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
what is with that? You wonder whether it was some sort of mind control operation going on with that.
Well, Andrew, let me, for those that don't know, he was born very close to me and Andrew, went to Evergreen Park High School, and at 16, somehow a school that I don't even think taught calculus, maybe they did, was considered, I don't know where he learned it, whether he had a physics uncle or something, was a genius in math well beyond his years. And I think he went to Harvard at age 16, got in this drug sort of experimented thing, if they could expand the minds of people that were that brilliant. And he ended up living in a cabin in some damn place and blowing people up by mail. I mean, and Harvard somehow came out smelling like a rose. I don't know how they did.
Okay. Here's why I'm hemming and hawing. You've inadvertently are talking to two people who have thoughts and knowledge that answers your question, and I at least am stumbling around because I don't know how deep you want
to
go into.
Well, I'm not saying they should have been shut down or going to jail, but I mean they never even got, you know, even a little spanked for it in the paper.
Okay, here's the answer, I think, to your question, and I'll go briefly into the rabbit hole for you. First of all, it may not be headline news what the consequences are, but for those who want to dig into it, I think the facts are somewhat clear. And of course, there's nobody around to punish anymore. But here's the big thing looming in the background. The introduction of LSD into the United States has to do with national security and funding of research scientists seeking
really wow
truth serums. And here's something, if we go back, and some of the listeners are going to think, what did you guys choreograph this whole thing before we get into the supposedly random thing? So no, this is, dear listeners, this is just evolved organically. But when I was growing up there on the South Side, my mother volunteered for the Marines in World War II, became a writer, writing about different things. And the reason we moved to New York is she wanted to be a more connected to the publishing industry. She ends up as medical editor of Parents Magazine. And among her efforts are working with research scientists at Harvard and going to the Amazon jungle to research the development of advanced medicine with these Harvard scientists. And she wrote a very important book, Green Medicine, The Search for the Plants That Cure. And a chapter of that was she went to Switzerland to interview the creator of LSD, whose name was Hoffman. And, you know, I'm a kid doing my own thing, so I'm not that following that stuff, except on an incidental basis. But more and more, to get to the point here, I'm realizing from other books that Harvard team had to have been funded by a three-letter agency and our government, and I found references to actually my mother and that trip, and to someone who was heavily involved at the highest levels of a three-letter agency who my mother worked with. And so to... I don't know how many minutes I've been.
Let me ask you one question: is your dad a canonized saint? He has to be.
He was a great. He's a great guy.
Did he have any idea what he was signing up for?
I actually don't recall ever talking with him about it much. But he was. He was our Boy Scout leader for years. He was.
And his wife's in the wife's in the jungle finding drugs. That's unbelievable.
And he was really an amazing dad. He'd always take time to come to the sports games I was at. In fact, my friends, none of their fathers would or could come, and they thought he must be unemployed. He was just worked it out so that kids. Afternoon sports games in high school were something he wanted to do. But at any rate, I'm finding out, and Wayne knows this, and I'm finishing up here, because Wayne has actually gotten to know a writer who wrote a whole book about how the Rockefeller family, I've got the book right here, It's "They Will Be Done" by Gerald Colby and Charlotte Dennett. It's about how the former governor of New York, Nelson Rockefeller, and his family was heavily involved in let's say just evangelizing in South America. And there's a whole half page about my mother and the research people she was working with and psychedelic drugs. And so that's kind of the end of this rabbit hole, except to say
That's fascinating.
That and there's a few other books. There was let me think, Wayne. Was Frank Olson a CIA guy?
Yeah, he was CIA.
Okay, so I'll hand the mic after you ask some questions, Chief. Frank Olson is kind of a famous sad case because he's a guy who worked for the CIA who jumped out of a hotel building in 1952, and apparently he'd been given these psychedelic drugs and jumped out of his hotel window, and some operator, remember back in the days when they had long distance operators?
Oh yeah.
Listened in to a conversation from his hotel room, and what was it? Somebody called Washington from the New York hotel room where the guy had just jumped out and said, "Yeah, it's done." And the U.S. government had to pay the relatives 25 years later because they said, "What do you mean it's done?" The guy jumped out of the window. And so there were experiments using this stuff. To go back to your original question, and I'm clocking it, don't I haven't talked too long, but and they realized, gee, it'd be nice to have a truth serum, but LSD ain't it.
God. Well, there were a whole bunch of them. There's a young lady downstairs who I don't know what she does for a living. I know her, well, just to talk to her. She went down to South America, was up with the Indians up in the mountains somewhere trying some wild peyotes at the crazy stuff.
Oh, that's part of it. That was part of my mother's book. And Wayne, please correct the record. What have I missed or gotten wrong?
Well, in the case of Frank Olson, the CIA guy that he was with was spiking his drink, without the guy's knowledge, and took a flying leap out of the window. Now I don't know whether this explains some of Putin's victims over in Moscow that have a tendency to, they say, fall out of windows. I think it's probably assisted
or get on the wrong plane.
As I recall, and I've got an entire book, it's called The Frank Olson Story, although that's disputatious, parts can be disputed, because all of this stuff is secret, but Olson had been working on this program, and I think, Wayne, am I correct that there was a suspicion that he had ethical concerns, and he was... talking out of turn.
I once at the press club saw a guy putting brochures in the slot that they had a big shelf there where you could, you know, people always put stuff there thinking some journalists will pick it up and write about them. And there was a guy there with Physicians for Social Responsibility, and I asked him, what he was putting in there, and he says, we're with this group. Turns out, I mentioned the guy who was in charge of these operations at the CIA was a guy named Dr. Sidney Gottlieb. So this guy who was a physician himself said, "Oh yeah, when I was a kid, we lived next door to the Gottliebs, and Dr. Gottlieb was such a nice guy. He used to take us up to you know, summer camp, and, you know, and I said, yeah, but he was in charge of this awful CIA program that developed these psychological programs to, you know, pre-program assassins. That gets back into the J.D. Salinger, Catcher in the Rye thing, MK Ultra and all these other.
It's the Jason Bourne deal.
Absolutely. That's what that's patterned after. And he says, oh, no, yeah, Sidney Gottlieb was a terrible guy, but, God, he was such a nice guy when I was a kid growing up.
Well, you know, you guys have gone and taken, as usual, a very roundabout route to come into a lot of what I wanted to talk about today. I was questioning Lou, and I'll talk more about it with Carl tomorrow. This $1.7 billion, you know, we could talk about what it's going to be used for and other kind of crap, but where does the money come from? It seems to me that the CIA has been self-funding for like a long time. And with Afghanistan, I heard, and again, this is just, you know, crap that I hear, that the Taliban had pretty much pushed the squash on the opium business. But when we got in there, it started to flourish again, and the rumor was that the CIA was... It always wants to be somewhat self-funding. And now these types of things you're talking about with Gottlieb, and I can't believe, I shouldn't say that. It's hard for me to believe that somewhere in Congress this guy showed up and said, we're going to start doing all these experiments on people, and by the way, we're hoping to find the right true serum, and we need, you know, $100 million or $50 million in Congress. Somehow tax it onto a bill and gets to them. I don't.
No, that's not the way it works. By the way, I'm holding in my hand, as they say, I went to a shelf, Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control by Stephen Kinzer, best-selling author, 1986 book. And that's, you know, these books come out. I mean, so here's a book that's been around 40 years. It's certainly interesting, but it's never going to be the whole story, because particularly now where you can get indicted if you talk to a reporter or author, people have to piece it together. And even the investigative authors, and Wayne and I know them and try to be them, at some point you pull your punches because you think, well, that one's a neutron bomb that's going to blow up in the author's face. I mean,
also, Chief, you asked how they do that, and what the CIA used to do is with these, they call them these black programs, covert stuff. It was like very creative budgeting. What they would do is you'd find pieces of what the CIA was clandestinely doing in say the budget for the Tennessee Valley Authority or the U.S. Forest Service. They would actually pepper that this money throughout the budget. It was never belonged to those agencies. It actually was for the agency, and they would just hide it in these other agencies and departments' budgets. I have to figure it still goes on.
I hope I'll bore the crap out of people with this, but I always wondered on the deep. I'm a numbers guy. What can I tell you? If it's in the TVA. Okay, does that mean that some guy, or I'm thinking more a guy than a lady, somehow has a chunk of money in a Tennessee bank, and if somebody does something for him, this guy has signing authority over that check and can send Andrew a check? I mean, I don't know. This whole thing with this $1.7 billion that Trump...
People are planted in these agencies or private sector places... Who's the reason that they have their job is they know what's going on, and they have their sinecure to approve things and to connect the dots. And sorry to try to interrupt, but But that's where what we're talking about with this Harvard research funding that I started off talking about, that clearly at least some people in that trying to think whether it's a medical school were getting funding probably from the U.S. government, probably from a black budget, to look into this stuff, and it would not be in any way apparent to anybody in Congress or any place else, except somebody who might be an oversight person. If it's brought to their attention, they might just say, well, we're not going to get into that. And they wouldn't know the details, just like the antelope on the African plains never read a memo that you stay away from the lions. Yeah. They just kind of know you stay away
Well, on the sky level, again, this is my own stupidity. On a sky level, I get the fact that somewhere buried in, you know, what did Wayne just say? The Forest Department budget is a chunk for the CIA, but somehow, someplace, somebody in Washington from the Congress, something that's approved, somebody has to send the check to, you know, bum something bank in Oklahoma, and somehow or another Gottlieb has to have signing privileges on that check. I don't see how that works. I have
no. Talk about another book that I keep right close to my shelf. Something written by a guy named Fletcher Prouty, and it's called The Secret Team. It came out in 1973, and Fletcher Prouty was a extremely well-connected former Air Force pilot who was, get this, the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA in the 1950s under Eisenhower, and then he had the same job under JFK. And he wrote basically the first book about what we're talking about. And again, it was 1973, it was called The Secret Team. And he said the public should understand that there are people in all kinds of private sector jobs, in government agencies, or even in the White House, who are there because they were tapped on the shoulder, in effect, and they're part of the secret team, and while 95% of their job is doing working at a bank or in some agency or something, they know that they were recommended for their job because they're expected to be part of the secret team and to do what's needed on a confidential basis when it's appropriate or asked or requested. And again, the reason I mentioned Prouty's background is he actually worked at the Defense Department working with the CIA on things like propaganda, regime change, what else? Assassinations.
Well, it's a hell of a lot easier if you are selling opium in Afghanistan and you open up your own bank account in Switzerland to hide stuff. I mean, this thing coming out of, again, after break, I'm going to talk a little bit about how, you know, $1.7 billion to the government, you know, I guess it's chump change to them, but it isn't to us. Somehow, some way, that money has to get from Congress to somewhere. I mean, I don't know how that, we'll talk about this.
Oh, after, well, by the way, yesterday, last night, I mean, this stuff is fast moving. That may be blocked. Because it was just too obvious, too much, and we're coming up on break, but there were major developments yesterday afternoon, both on this money, but also in the willingness of U.S. senators following Trump's endorsement in Texas against a sitting colleague John Cornyn in that primary race down there. There's major developments that...
But how did they... real quick. But how would it... If it went through just as it did, would Congress have to apportion the $1.7 billion? I mean, how does the Department of Justice write a check?
It was too obvious. So instead of using all of these conduits and everything, Trump just said we need, you know, $1.8 billion for this money that the Justice Department would dole out from an ongoing fund, which is supposed to be used for other purposes.
Okay, so they have the money. That would be the answer then. That the money was supposed to be. It's not like $1.8 billion is going to go and chase with an account apportioned for this that somebody in the Justice Department gets the right to check out of.
Well, the Congress would have. The fund doesn't have $1.8 billion, it's got far less. And it's supposed to go through procedures. And President Trump just, and he says, well, I got nothing to do with it, but my Todd Blanche at the Justice Department has this idea. And what happened late yesterday was the Senate Majority Leader, John Thune of South Dakota, he basically said, I don't think so. And that, for a Republican to say that to a President Trump's idea, is huge.
And the ballroom is also in trouble.
Well, they got to be getting heat on that.
Yeah, and that's part of that too. And it has to do, and I know we're coming up on break, probably with going after in the primary season their fellow Republicans, like Bill Cassidy, who just lost in Louisiana, and Cornyn down in Texas, they're thinking, well, going along with this administration on everything, we're seeing that that's going to cost us our seats.
Well, S&P futures up 26, down 26, sorry. NASDAQ is down 154. We had a big update yesterday. We'll talk about it real quick, and then we'll be right back to our guys. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jacks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjacks.net. That's matt@stocksandjacks.net.
Stocks and Jocks. Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky Garcia on the board. S&P futures down 27. NASDAQ futures down 159. I'm going to buzz through this because we got our guys. We're talking about interesting stuff over in Europe. Oh, by the way, earnings last night, we had NVIDIA came out, and they did real well on revenue and everything, but they're down 44 cents. Interesting story today, but the head of NVIDIA says he's basically conceding the Chinese market to Huawei. And we'll get Andrew and Wayne's comment on that. I don't know if there's any licenses involved or anything like that. I didn't read any of the details, but there's got to be more to that story. DAX down 138.6%, FTSE down 29.3%, CAC around down 39.5%. So mildly down in Europe. Again, we had updates yesterday. Nikkei, however, up 1,800 points. That's 3%. Not sure why that is, but except Iran and U.S. are in final stage of negotiations. By the way, Trump came out with that at a picnic yesterday, and I wonder if his guys were buying before. They ran the market up huge. It was up a little bit when we did the show, and all of a sudden he said, now we're a couple days away from a settlement. And let's just say the market took off from there. Yesterday, the bonds, interest rates were down severely, well, a lot. Now they're bouncing right back up today. So we're back to the 30-year at 5.15. and a 10-year at 4.62. So they're resuming their creep to the upside here. I'm going to get our guys' comment on that as well. Japan, 2.77, the highest it's been since 1996. So these are real numbers here. Oil, back up 280 over 101.06. So it doesn't look like the conflict's going to be over in 2 days from the oil is moving here today. RBOB up only 3 cents, 351. which equates to somewhere between $4.40 and $5, depending on your taxes and stuff where you live in the country, which is what we're all feeling. Gold down $25, $45.09. Silver down $1.20, $74.98. It was up yesterday, back the other way today. Foreign exchange, dollar 1.16. Again, it's a 1% move to the positive from last week. A British pound 1.34. Another 1% move to the positive from last week. Japan getting nudging back up here to the 1.60 number, which panics the hell out of those guys. We're back up to 1.59.13. Last time I got the 1.60, they poured a whole lot of dollars in there and actually cashed in some U.S. bonds, which is not what we want to have happen here, given our deficit. Crypto down 361.77.159. By the way, just on yesterday as a way of review, Dow was up 645, S&P up 79, NASDAQ down up 399. So we're not even close to coming back on any of that stuff, or maybe back a third, if that. Ricky, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 51 degrees right now with a high of 57. Cool with times of clouds and sun. A little bit of breeze this afternoon, and tonight will be cloudy with a low of 51 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 68 degrees right now with a high of 97. Warm with plenty of sun. Tonight will be clear and hot with a low of 71 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, accident reported outbound on Kennedy at Ohio Street exit 50B. Inbound from Montrose is 26 minutes. Another accident has been reported inbound on Eisenhower at Laramie Avenue, exit 24A, causing some heavy traffic. No accidents reported on Stevenson or Dan Ryan, but they are heavily congested inbound. Stevenson from 294 is 35 minutes, and Dan Ryan from 95th is 26 minutes. Let's talk sports super quick. Sox lose to Mariners 5-4, and Cubs lose to Brewers 5-0 yesterday. But the Diamondbacks did beat Giants 6-3. Today we got Rockies at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. For the NHL, Western Conference Finals started yesterday as Golden Knights beat Avalanche 4-2, and today we see the start of Eastern Finals, Canadians and Hurricanes at 7 p.m. Finally, NBA. Yesterday, Oklahoma bounced back in Game 2. They beat Spurs 122-113 and tied the series. Today, Cavaliers at Knicks for Game 2. New York with the lead. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
Guys, you mind if I switch gears just a hair? And I've been talking, one of my themes this week, and I like to involve so everybody in what we're talking about, has to do with what we're seeing. You know, part of it's the war, part of it is the terrorists, part of it is the accusing people that, you know, being no good nicks. And when I say people, I mean other countries. And I get this feeling, and I don't know anything about the mind of the man or the people around him, but I get the feeling that there doesn't seem to be any. I mean, he obviously doesn't like the way the world financial system is operating for the last 100 years. But you guys might know there was Asian dude one time had a famous quote: no man can do just one thing. Whatever you do, it involves a whole bunch of other stuff. I get the feeling that somehow the knowledge is either not being explained to people properly, or they don't know what they're doing. They look at a trade deficit and they say, well, God, we're getting screwed. Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, it depends on. I don't sense the. And I know that, you know, the Republican side's going to say, well, whatever it is, they're smarter than Democrats would have been. Okay, I'll only go with that a little way. But somehow or another, the idea that we have overspent in this country for like a long time, and we had these trade imbalances with a lot of places because we buy stuff. For a long time, we bought a boatload of oil before we started to have as much oil here as we needed. And in return, these countries turned around and bought our essentially our deficit stuff. There's a quid pro quo here. Does anybody even know what the current account deficit is versus the trade deficit, or do they not even care? I don't even think Trump knows. I mean, but if you upset this apple cart and say everybody we have a trade deficit with all of a sudden is essentially a villain, and we got to put tariffs on it to stop it, where exactly does he think the money's going to come to fund the money he and all these other guys are spending? It seems like they don't really understand the process and what kind of foundation they're shaking here. I'm not saying it's a great foundation. I'd rather have us not be beholden, but you can only accuse the Japanese and the Brits so much when you owe the people $2 trillion, for God's sake. He doesn't even get that?
Well, I'm not sure he ever did, but with increasing age, he, like a lot of his supporters, in my view, they're operating on gut reactions to phrases that you know the history of, your listeners know the history of, and the nuances, but if you just take the words, it's like a red flag to a bull in the arena, bullfighting arena, because trade deficit sounds bad, and that's almost the level that our king is operating under, whereas you're trying to puzzle out because you know all these nuances, but there's virtually no evidence that he knows those nuances or necessarily did, because he keeps talking about his degree from Wharton as if that's a bona fide that will carry him through everything.
And he falsely states that degree is an MBA, which it wasn't. He attended an undergrad courses.
He's a transfer. For example, here's the thing, and I thought it was kind of interesting because there's a very well-connected, I'll just say friend, who's a proud graduate of Fordham. And about a year ago, he was saying, you know, we at Fordham are very upset that Trump is always talking about Wharton and the University of Pennsylvania when he spent his first 2 years at Fordham. We love Fordham. Why doesn't he talk about that? Well, the reason is, as Wayne kind of hinted at, is because he wants that Ivy League nuance inference that he's an MBA from Wharton's MBA program, and whereas people are justifiably proud of an education that they might get at Fordham, which harks back to your conversation with Lou, he doesn't want any part of that because he wants to pretend to have this one credential to justify stuff that's...
Well, just as history, if you know this.
Yeah.
When did Wharton become Wharton?
Well, I don't know that offhand, but it's like the economics department, as I understand it, I may be wrong on this, the economics department undergrad is also called Wharton. Maybe they have, you know, classes. And
yeah, it's in the Wharton building at the campus.
But that's
what
he went to undergrad there. He didn't go to grad school, correct?
And for 2 years after coming out of Fordham. And by the way, there's a lot of questions that...
he had very bad grades in Fordham. I mean, he was basically flunking out.
Well, but if you were to say to somebody, Wharton is considered, to most citizens here, Wharton is considered University of Pennsylvania's MBA program. Now, the fact that the undergrad has picked up the same name because it's the same building, if I were to say to somebody tomorrow, I graduated from Wharton, they're immediately going to assume that I have an MBA from Wharton.
Of course.
That's the whole point. Yeah, that's why he does it. But it gets back to, you're trying to puzzle out, why doesn't he understand what trade deficit really means? And at the risk of being a little blunt here, I'm saying, well, I'm not sure he ever realized that when he went to Wharton.
Well, every business he's been involved in has gone bankrupt or has gone into severe financial distress. I mean, that's the case. And the same can be said about his son-in-law, Kushner. Kushner, the real estate outfit, which father and son operation, they were in really bad financial straits.
Well, what... I mean, I when I tell people I went to the University of Chicago for an MBA, they go, you went to Booth. And I go, no, I didn't. When I went there, it wasn't Booth. It was just the University of Chicago MBA. Oh. Well, I guess that's my question. Was it Wharton? It had to be. How many? 60 years ago he was there. Was it Wharton back then? I guess is my question.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was. Okay. All right. Because University of Chicago is not Booth.
Wayne is from Philadelphia.
Okay, so he knows all this stuff.
Filling us in on the background here.
But it wouldn't be correct for me to say I went to Booth, because Booth hadn't given him the dough when I was there, right?
Yeah.
Well, if we live in a world of hyperbole, and not you, but others in this world, of image and pretend, and so...
Well, what? Where does this? I, you know, there's a lot of people now. You know, you get on the YouTube and so forth, and you guys have been very straightforward on what's happening to regular. But there needs to be, I think, some sort of knowledge, and maybe it's just been too long. Maybe I just, you know, so long ago that the idea of where's inflation taking us. Everybody assumes that if this guy, the new Fed chairman, comes in, wants to lower interest rates, they will go down. And yet, I think all of us realize the Fed, unless they want to just blow up the balance sheet like they did during COVID, and actually they did control long-term rates because they bought $4 trillion of them, for God's sake, of the bonds, they can't do that again without taking the whole thing under. So if anybody thinks that they're going to be able to do that, I mean, if your inflation is up higher, they're out of their friggin' mind. And yet, you don't see anybody talking about it. A couple of guys and CNBC saying, you know, this number, these deficit numbers are getting too big. And part of the problem, I mean, the Japan rates, I don't know if you guys want, it doesn't sound like a big deal, 2.76 on their 10-year. That's the highest it's been since 1996. Japan, what do they owe on? They owe per capita like twice as much as we do, right? How the hell are they going to pay a 4 and 5% interest rate on that?
Well, Paul Krugman wrote a pretty interesting column on Substack. He left the New York Times because he said they're not printing what I want, or I write it, but it doesn't come out the way I want. So he quit the New York Times, I think, a year and a half ago. But his column this week was the new Fed chairman got what he's always wanted, but he's not going to like it because, for one thing, he's just one vote on the Fed. And he promised Trump and everybody he's going to lower interest rates. And one, he may not have the votes because we've got inflation. And they're supposed to, you know, fight inflation. And so he's very soon after he takes office, he's going to get all this pressure from the president to lower interest rates. And he's not going to be able to do it. And he's going to be, welcome to your new job as human pinata, because he's going to get clobbered for not.
Yeah, and he's also going to have Jerome Powell whipping votes against him on that board, because, well, Powell's still a member.
How come nobody, I mean, I just watch the stuff that impacts the markets for my clients all day, but the I shouldn't. I will, though. The flunky he put on there 6 months ago to replace the lady who quit suddenly, Moran, what's his name, Moran or whatever, he's been the only guy that has voted to lower interest rates. He's the guy that is being replaced by the new guy. So the one vote to lower interest rates the last four or five meetings came from that guy. Now he's out. So now.
Well, he may still have his White House job because he was double dipping. He was also still working with the White House.
But so now, but this guy's like you say, he's got. But I've not heard anything. I suppose if you watched 24 hours a day, somebody somewhere would have said, well, "Wait a minute, the guy he's replacing is the one vote that Trump's got now." I mean, so he's back. He's back. I mean, why is that not so obvious? Or people say, "Wait a minute, what's this guy's going into a room where everybody knows you can't be lowering rates here, for God's sake."
Well, not to mention specifically your viewer source, but Wayne and I constantly exchange information about the pressures that affect people who go on these nationwide shows. And by the way, I once forced Wayne to calculate that Wayne has been a guest expert on 16 of the 17 major networks and cable shows. So he's been there and seen that. And the pressures that guests and hosts have that the viewers don't realize to say what they're supposed to say. Whereas, you know, here's something I sometimes say to people if they're say, I'm not sure I can trust my TV news. And I say, how much do you pay for it? And they say, well, I don't pay anything. It's free. And I say, well, maybe that's what they owe you.
Well, that's, payment for order flow. If my commissions are free, I'm not the client, or am I? Well, the guy from CNBC, was it when John had a party one night, and I said, you know, how do you... I mean, like Matt Weber used to say about me, he said, Chief, you're the only guy I've ever worked with that has no notes. Whatever the person says is an answer, you listen to the answer and you formulate your next question. He goes, nobody does that. They have their list of five questions they're going to ask them because those have all been approved by somebody. But right. I mean, you got the CNBC, Bloomberg. No, not many people have Bloomberg, but Fox Business. So if you want the chairman of Apple coming on your show right after the earnings, you can't ask him the questions that you and I would ask him, or you guys and I would ask him. I mean, if you ever ask him the bad question, they're never coming back again. So it turns out to be this, like, you know, mealy mouth kind of thing.
Yeah, it's all PR type deal.
I never was asked back. I don't think I was banned from CNBC. They had me on, this is a long time ago. So you had to go down to this little room and down the block here, and they put some makeup on, and you're sitting there, but you couldn't tell where the camera was. It's this black room, and there was no monitor. So if you didn't know the guy's voice from coming from CNBC, like if you didn't know it was Joe Kernan or whatever, you'd say it was the other guy. You have no idea who it was, right? So I'm sitting there, and it was about Walmart earnings, which I didn't give a rat's ass about because we didn't have anybody that, you know, any of our bigger clients, nobody even had Walmart. So it's not something I really watched that much. And So the first thing I hear, my girlfriend calls me on the way back, and she goes, God, you look like Tricky Dick. I go, what are you talking about? She goes, your eyes were darting all over the place like you were, you know, like... And I said, well, I couldn't figure out where the camera was. So I'm looking around. Anyway.
Well, that's kind of funny because, you know, they teach people, and or some of us have to learn it on our own. Yeah, you're supposed to look at the camera, but, you know, the first times you do it, you're looking around like...
Well, the worst thing, too, is they leave the monitor on, so you have a tendency to want to look at yourself.
Well, there was no monitor.
Then, yeah, that's not where you look, and then you look like you're drunk or something.
Well, that's just what I looked like.
Large and small. So there was one time where, Wayne, I forget, you were moderator of a fairly small operation, but they'd have good guests, Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune and so forth. And so Wayne was doing a research trip to Asia, and he recommended me to be, you know, guest moderator of this operation. And I thought, well, I'll contact the guests to get to know them a little bit before the weekly news show. And the producer went nuts over this. She said, no, you just ask the questions, and we give you the questions. And I said, well, wouldn't you want me as the moderator to be, like, prepared? And said, no, we'll give you the questions and everything.
Well, we were talking about Walmart and Joe Kernan out of the blue. It was the day that Warren Buffett bought the Burlington Northern. So he said something about, hey, Tom, it looks like, Warren Buffett just bought the Burlington Northern. Do you have any comment on that? And I said, well, Joe, it just so happens it's kind of my wheelhouse. I'm kind of like an old railroader. He goes, really? And I go, yeah, the rumor is that they got this oil up there in Dakota. And I said, the Burlington Northern, for those that don't know, is a combination of the Great Northern, Northern Pacific, Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy. Now, Joe's eyes are, like, you know, going over on this point. I said, they essentially have a rail monopoly in a place they just stole oil. And Warren Buffett has figured it out. It's a monopoly. They couldn't. Well, Tom, thanks for coming to see me.
Yeah.
And I was never invited back.
Well, you can, discerning viewers can sometimes see earpieces, particularly in the men, it's a little harder to hide the earpieces with the hair of female presenters. But that's what it's for, is for the producers to say, okay, here's your next question.
Get rid of this guy.
Get rid of this guy. But the joke sort of is, and everybody, and by the way, if the three of us, God, you imagine three of us on national TV, if we started talking about deficits and things like that, some very attractive lady or guy is going to say, hey, guys, people have been bitching about this for 20 years. It ain't happening. And yet, everybody, when you start seeing other countries that we're depending on, starting to have a problem. I mean, how many people even know that the Japanese, if they have to pile in today and rescue their currency again, as it's getting back to 160. For those that don't know, don't look at your Japanese currency. If you look at the euro and it's 117, that means a dollar is a buck, and it takes $1.17 to get you a euro. The Japan's the other way around. When it's 160, it means there's 160 yen to the dollar. So if the yen goes up to 161, it means the yen goes down, right? It's the other way around. Why it's like that, I don't know, but that's been the convention forever. But if those guys have to start piling in again and defend this 160 number and cash in some more bonds over here to do it, this trickle is starting to get a little stronger. It's going from a stream to a brook here or something. And it's something that, you know, we have to keep our eye on. It's not like, I'll tell you guys the same story I told yesterday. Somebody asked Milton Friedman in class one day, do you worry about federal deficits? And the answer was no. Now, you might say, why the hell did he say that? He goes, it's just like your mother and father. If the old man loses a bet to the mother and she owes him $100, it doesn't matter because the house is flat. Even though somebody in the house, he goes, in the U.S., if the citizens, the government owns the citizens' money, it's, you know, it's maybe not the best, but it's no big deal. Because in those days, this was in the early 70s or mid-70s, what would you guess? 80-90% of our debt was owned by people in the U.S. Well, it's not like that anymore. I think if you rousted Milton Friedman out of his grave, the answer would be quite a bit different, don't you?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, I think also when Trump left China, he also left the entire, that part of the world relatively unstable because of his comments about Taiwan. That had a ripple effect in Japan, South Korea, and many other countries.
Also, Japan and Southeast Asia, they're heavily reliant on this Gulf oil. And so it's not an academic issue if you're manufacturers in Southeast Asia or Japan about energy issues. They're digging into strategic reserves all over the world, but particularly there. Think how bad it must be for Japan's economy and our relationship with them economically that they're digging into their strategic reserve right now to help Southeast Asian nations because they need the manufacturing of parts coming into Japan to make ultimate products. And they don't have oil and gas in Japan, and they're giving what they have on an emergency basis to Southeast Asia to keep the kind of commerce going for at least.
Well, the biggest winners in this war are people we don't like, and the biggest losers are our best allies. Or where am I wrong?
Well,
absolutely, exactly. Yeah.
And that picture yesterday that I thought was maybe an award-winning picture of Putin and Xi in a flower. Was in the Great Hall, surrounded by flowers, huge smiles of their very successful meetings a week after Trump left with almost nothing except maybe some promise about buying.
Oh, don't forget that she gave him some rose seeds so he could regrow the rose garden at the White House.
The other
interesting thing, I don't think anybody's reported on this, but you know what... she served Trump at that state dinner? Orange chicken.
I was going to say chop suey.
Oh, come on.
Orange chicken. It is on the Chinese menu. I've had it. You know, it's,
no, it's all
orange
right,
sauce
yeah.
on chicken. That's what the that's what was served to him.
We might have some in the office tomorrow. You know, orange chicken. We like it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, what was she basically saying? You're an orange chicken.
You know, how do you, some people, I guess if you have some sort of a moral tone to your body, you don't get out of the limousine and you know, slap some lady on the butt and then tell some other guy how he should stop sleeping around. I mean, you don't do that. I mean, if you're going to tell somebody, you're supposed to be following the rules yourself. You don't have 2 days of saying, by the way, we really do need this Greenland, and we're going to take over Cuba, and maybe Venezuela is going to be the 51st state. Walk over and say, "Hey, you got to lay off Taiwan." How does anybody even? How does any normal person even think they can make that statement?
Well, a normal person wouldn't. In Greenland, he sends us this Landry, the governor of Louisiana, up there, and everybody gave him the cold shoulder, I guess pun intended, and he was offering these like 10-year-old boys he encountered. He said, well, if you come to Louisiana, you come to the governor's mansion, and I'll give you all the chocolate chip cookies you want. I mean, hell, with what's going on right now?
What exactly is our bitch with Cuba? And how do we...
I've never understood it. It's a two-hour flight from Tampa to Havana. I would have loved to have taken that flight because I've never been to Cuba. But, they're continuing this embargo and everything. It's ridiculous.
We got a minute. Explain about these four people that Raul Castro. I'm not saying Raul Castro is a great guy or anything.
Yeah.
There's four Americans, but if we start this prosecution thing, why can't somebody be pissed at the 58 Cuban people that Trump killed in Venezuela?
Oh, yeah. By the way, those planes were headed into Cuban airspace. They were warned repeatedly to turn around, and they didn't. What would happen if Cuban planes were heading to Florida and disregarded all the warnings? We'd shoot it down. That's exactly what they did. They didn't know what those guys were up to. They could have had weapons or anything on those planes.
Yeah, I'm not any time somebody killed, I'm never going to justify that. But this whole idea that we can prosecute people other places, we can do whatever we want here, and it's only one way. Well, boy, you better hope the world doesn't change, because the other guy might say, well, wait a minute, now I get to do it too, and I don't want to see that.
Well, it's not just an embodiment of the slogan, Mike makes right, but President Trump put out on Truth Social a meme that shows him heroically visualization with the words, it's our hemisphere. And so people could look it up. It's a graphic image that the entire hemisphere is the United States.
Well, it's not the United States, it's his. There's a difference.
And there's only one person who decides what the U.S. interest is. And so when he says it's our hemisphere, he basically means it's Trump's hemisphere. And once you realize this is what he put out to his followers, and this is what they believe, everything becomes understandable.
Well, what is the... we'll take one more minute. What is this election starting to look like? That some of these guys are out. If the people that he just pissed off in the Senate, if they turn around and make the Senate vote on this Iran war, none of these Republicans want to vote there for it. That's why they keep. I think that's why they keep not wanting to say they have to vote on it, because they don't. Yeah. They don't want to go home and say I voted for the war, because I think it's very unpopular.
Well, the Louisiana Senator, Bill Cassidy, within days of him losing his primary to a Trump-endorsed candidate, he provided a new vote, a critical new vote, to bring the war resolution to the Senate now. And so it just passed with his vote. Now, there's a long process, and the long process probably won't go anywhere, because you're not going to have the Senate contradict the president in a meaningful way like this, but it's a process that he, in effect, put into action by his going after these senators. So it's a Pyrrhic victory for him to get rid
any of chance that any of these guys. Last question: any chance that some of these guys have a Democratic opponent and it all blows up in his face? I think probably not, but.
Tallarico in Texas, I think, would beat this guy Paxton if he should beat Cornyn in the primary. Trump said he doesn't really care about the Senate or the House, which opens the question, if the Democrats take one or both chambers, is he just going to just say, well, I'm not going to listen to anything Congress does. I'm going to do whatever I want. And then where are we?
I think that's where we're going to be. Hey, quick question, Andrew. What executive orders, we've been talking about those a little bit. What exactly, like, let's say Carter or Reagan put through an executive order. They're gone. Where's the order? Is it in the trash? Does anybody pay any attention to it? Is it gone when they're gone? Is it gone when they're dead? What happens to these things?
Well, they're not. I think they continue unless they're specifically overruled by the incoming person or they're time limited. But that's why you have staff coming in on a transition team to say, okay, here's a whole bunch of executive orders that we want to countermand. But some continue, and some are in the national security area are so secret that almost nobody knows about them.
But they're not a law. Nobody can say you just did something against Roosevelt executive order. You're going to jail. I mean, right?
Right.
Right. They're orders. They're not laws. Yeah, there's a big difference.
Most of society thinks they're laws, by the way. It's a problem we have. You know, I mean, it's an education thing. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. SP Futures down 26, NASDAQ Futures down 170. You still, you getting rain in Florida yet, Wayne? Are you guys still?
Oh, we had some last night, but it's going to take many more rainstorms to get us back to where we should be. But it was nice. At least it took care of some of the pollen that's been killing me down here.
Well, what are you going to do if the alligator doesn't have a pond and he's in your pool? How do you get him out of there?
Then you invite him in to be in your bathtub.
God. Anyway, guys, take care. Ricky, nice job. SP Futures down 24. NASDAQ Futures down 155. Interesting stock here is Microsoft. In the last 2 minutes, has gone from up 2 to up 9 to up 2 to up 9. So something's happening in there. We'll talk about it tomorrow morning. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.